This honestly felt like a scene out of, like, I know it was a joke, and I'll play it for you in a second if you haven't seen it. Felt like a scene out of, like, North Korea. You know, where you've got, like, the superior leader and everybody has to applaud in unison. You know what it is? Yeah, yeah.
By the way, he makes one car. This one I don't understand. This one I don't want, but that's okay. Without a steering wheel. It comes out next year. Right? Yes. Explain that, please.
Zach Abraham, what would you do with a credit card if it had a $1 limit? What would you buy?
Oh, man.
A dollar. What would you spend?
I don't know. Is there anything that's a dollar anymore? I mean, back in the day, I had up to the pharmacy that was up the street. You know, you get the 10-cent Jolly Ranchers and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
I tell my kids those stories now, and I really enjoy it because it makes me feel like I'm really old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you hear those stories growing up, and you're like, you know, your dad's telling you about, you know, 10-cent donuts and things like that. And you're just like, oh, that's crazy. Now I tell them about, like, 87-cent gasoline and 39-cent cheeseburgers at McDonald's, and they're just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, you could have bought, if this was, like, 20, 30 years ago, we could have got a gallon of gasoline with our $1 credit limit if we worked for a federal agency. So Elon Musk, they're trying to crack down on spending, and it's been difficult sometimes for them to get things to pass judicial muster. So rather than cancel all these credit cards that these employees have, he just set the limit at one. They can only spend a dollar. So
yeah,
as they said, they're according to Forbes or Fortune, workers say now they can't do their jobs.
Oh, what a bump! Yeah, because you gotta have a credit card to do your job, right? And that's why I'll say I honestly believe that part of this. I was listening to a really interesting interview with Victor Davis Hanson this weekend. And I thought he made some really good points. And I think that there is an element of this that is orchestrated, that is very much planned, which is, I think it's kind of like the political version of shock and awe, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think a really good example of that was the comments Trump made about turning Gaza into a resort.
Yeah.
Right. Like he says these things that are over the top on purpose that kind of shift the Overton window a little bit. Right. And it creates all of this chaos and people start freaking out. And meanwhile, it makes the original thing he was after in the first place, by definition, look more tied down, more level headed. Right. And I've seen him do this too many times to think that it's not strategic. This is a go-to strategy of his, I think, which is, you know, create the feeling of chaos. And look, he is an agent of chaos to a certain degree. I mean, that's kind of who he is. But also, there's an element of this, and the reason I'm saying this right now is there's an element of this that is so private sector, right? Like, it's really funny, because if this is a new CEO on the job, nobody be saying two words about it.
This has been characterized as a freeze. So it's not really as if it's like the $1 limit isn't really because he thinks that you should only spend a dollar. It's because that's all he could do short of canceling your credit card. So he basically, they don't want you to use it. It's a freeze while they evaluate some of the spending and some of the waste. And yes, of course, there are some federal employees who absolutely need credit cards. And yes, their ability to purchase things they might need day to day are being hindered in this moment. I read from this Fortune article, though, it said divisions are resorting to bartering with each other to obtain needed items. Oh, okay. So you found a way where you're asking another agency, hey, you got any of this? We can't buy any right now. And so they're getting it. So look, do I expect this to be in place forever? Is it a little bit maybe too much? In some instances, probably yes. But, you know, hiring freezes and spending freezes, these are things that happen all the time. So I think you're right that it's like they're throwing everything. It seems like a lot. There's probably a strategy there. But eventually some of it's going to go back. You know, it's like, so during the pandemic, I want to say it was like, though, the kind of late stages of the pandemic, our newsroom that I worked for at the time, maybe I guess we were hurting financially. So you know what they got rid of? They got rid of garbage pickup. So all of the trash bins we had under our desks, we had to physically go ourselves and empty our trash into like a central receptacle in the building. And then they'd come pick that up. So we all of a sudden, after years of somebody coming around at night and just cleaning our trash, we had to go clean up our own trash. So when they finally brought the trash pickup back, we were like, yeah, this is so luxurious, because we were used to dumping our own freaking little trash bins in some central trash bin. So maybe when they get the money back, they'll think more about how they spend it, and so that they don't abuse it and doesn't get taken away from them again.
Yeah, or some of this stuff doesn't need to come back, right? Yeah, like a lot of it doesn't. And a lot of the angst, and this is something that I think that Victor Davis Hanson was talking about in that interview that I listened to as well, which is I think it's very important to take a step back. And I see people, in my opinion, getting tripped up all over the place, where you hear people already saying there's too much chaos. I'm already getting tired of the chaos. Like, we got to separate, and you got to sit back and ask yourself, is this chaos that Trump is truly engendering, or is this chaos more of a response mechanism? It would have been a weird thing to me if Doge was doing the things and the Trump administration was doing the things that they're currently doing, and you would not have heard a din and an outcry.
Right.
That would have been weird. And that would have suggested to me that you're not making meaningful enough probes. You're not making meaningful enough cuts. You're not going after things in a serious or tenacious enough manner. If they're doing everything exactly the way they should, I would expect to hear this level of outcry and this level of chaos. So rather than it being a bug, I actually think it's a feature. And I think it's, if everything was going according to plan and they were making all the progress in all the right places, you would expect to hear a ton of consternation and a ton of hand-wringing.
It also has to do with what the media chooses and how much the media chooses to cover it. So if you have a Democratic president who's making some cuts like this, or, you know, overhaul, which I don't know if any Democrats would anymore, but let's say you did, the media wouldn't obsess over it to this extent. So the problem is sort of characterized by how big the media wants to make it seem. And they're very eager to go after Trump and Elon Musk. So any little thing they can find, I mean, they'll do full stories on, what was it, the whistleblower who was, oh, woe is me, who worked for USAID. And it was like, so they took this one whistleblower who didn't even want to be named, and they turned it into this big expose on CBS. You wouldn't see it if it was a Democrat who was making these decisions impacting federal workers' lives. So what the media chooses to make of it is often how big of a deal it's going to be. So this headline from Fox News, Doge says $312 million in loans were given to children during the COVID pandemic. Oh, kids got businesses too, you know. We needed to get those COVID loans out to those lemonade stands, you know, cool 2 million or whatever. This is not a surprise to me. I guess how much did we lose in Washington State to Nigerian scammers from our unemployment system during the pandemic?
Yeah, half a billion? Government. Yeah, I think so. I think it was like $500 million. Yeah, something like
that. So in one state, we lost $500 million. So like the oldest scam in the book, the Nigerian prince scam, basically, through unemployment benefits during COVID. So $312 million in loans given to children during the COVID pandemic doesn't surprise me one bit.
No, and that's it. My suspicion is that's just out and out fraud. It's probably parents putting out those PPP loans in their kids' names, would be my assumption. And again, it points to you, like, people are out there unquestionably asking themselves, wait a second, it was as easy as just putting your kid's name into one? Yes, not that I did it. We certainly didn't. But, you know, after the fact, you heard, you know, all kinds of stories where they were just throwing that money around.
Well, right. And there needs to be, this is what goes back to, like, Doge has to result in prosecutions, because there's no way. I mean, so this says, Doge identified that the Small Business Administration granted nearly 5,600 loans for $312 million to borrowers whose only listed owner was 11 years old or younger at the time of the loan. The loans were issued in 2020 and 2021 during the pandemic. It's unclear what they were used for. The agency said, well, it is possible to have business arrangements where this is legal. That is highly unlikely for these 5,593 loans, as they all also used a Social Security number with the incorrect name. So 5,000 plus loans using a Social Security number with the incorrect name. Are a couple of those maybe mistakes? Sure. All of them? I don't think so.
My question on this stuff, and this goes back to the whole point of Doge in the first place. When you look at the technology we have in place, how easy would it be to scrub a list? And it doesn't matter how big the list is. Right. Just cross references. Do these names and Social Security numbers match up?
Yep.
Right. I bet you could find yourself a millennial or a Gen Z programmer straight out of college that could put that together for you in a matter of 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's probably what, you know, Big Balls is doing for Elon.
Yes. Oh, Big Balls probably, doing that.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, doing it effectively, I'm sure. No, but this is how crazy all that is you sit there and you go, wait a second. If you were planning, I mean, think about it. If you were going to try to throw out that much money to that many people, think of the steps that you would take as a person, right? One of my first things would be, okay, if we're using names and social security numbers to ensure that these people are actually citizens, maybe we should have a filter to make sure those names and social security numbers match. Second of all, make sure that the people that are applying are over age 18 and eligible, right? There's all these little things you could do. And some of those things are due to constraints that we don't know about and things, but a big part of that is just kind of one of the problems that you have with government anyway, right? Which is just spending people's money in a way that nobody else would. None of us would do that. None of us would throw around that much cash without making sure that there were some safeguards in place where we knew, you know, that there was at least some way to verify that the people that were receiving tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, were who they said they were. I mean, this isn't right. These aren't high bars, right? We're not asking for a lot here. We're just saying, hey, can you make sure you don't give away hundreds of millions of people without running them through at least the most baseline, low bar type of litmus test to make sure you're not getting had? I mean, I don't think that that's a lot to ask.
No.
Right.
And I think part of it is also the antiquated nature of government. Like, our government has truly failed to keep up with technology. And in a way where, gosh, Elon Musk and his programmers, even if one of them calls himself Big Balls online, you know, they're way more in tune with technology and AI and all the ways that it can be used than our federal government. And so I think there are some elements there where they need to build systems that can identify these issues more quickly. Like, hey, make sure that those social security numbers, nobody's under the age of 18 or over the age of 100. Let's flag them and then see, are they legitimate or are they not legitimate? And you could save hundreds of millions of dollars by, you know, just having more up-to-date technology. And so, yeah, I think a lot of this is like, some of it's laziness, some of it's carelessness with taxpayer funds, some of it's a result of antiquated technology, and then it allows a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. So let's get to the bottom of it. There's nothing controversial about it.
There's nothing controversial about it, but all of these things are things that only occur in an environment where they can. Okay, meaning if you want to know if we waste money at Bulwark Capital, I'm sure there's a little bit here or there, but you're not going to find very much at all.
Yeah.
And you know why? Because the bottom line matters, right? You flip over to government, bottom line doesn't matter. So guess what you find? A lot of mismanaged money, a lot of wasted spending, and a lot of meaningless debt. Shocker, right? I mean, bottom line, it's not rocket science.
Yeah, and who cares about the bottom line? You know, at your business, it's clear. You at the end of the day, the buck stops with you, right? My business, it's clear. End of the day, the buck stops with me for the bottom line and who's managing it and where you see waste or whatever it is, getting on top of it. In the federal government, who actually cares? It's not their money. It's not impacting their paycheck and what they bring home. The federal government's always going to be there. The tax money's always going to roll in. So who cares about the bottom line? And that's the role that DOGE is filling right now. Like, they're saying, we care about the bottom line and we're going to try to get the house in order.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that is frustrating to me about where this country is, but specifically this state, because this state's government has repeatedly looked at the electorate and said, we don't care what you want. We don't care what you think. We don't even care what you voted for. Now you look at the $12 billion in deficit that we have here in the state of Washington, and I want to look around at the electorate and go, hey, guys, Republican, Democrat, doesn't really matter. Is anything that you care about that you think, is it being represented?
Yeah.
Okay. How many times has this state voted against an income tax? It's in our constitution, and yet they keep pushing for it. They don't. And that's the thing that blows me away in this state. It's not the right left. It's the fact that you've got this constituency that election after election just gets bent over, gets slapped around and just abused, and then comes back and votes for it again.
100%.
And it's not even, like I said, like I'm disagreeing. I'm talking about them disagreeing with the constituency, right? Like, if you get a survey in the state of Washington, 65% of people are against something. The state legislature votes for it. totally in disagreement with the vast majority. And then here comes election time and they refill all those people back in.
Well, it's like they're very passive news consumers, right? Mm-hmm. And they believe what the media tells them. So I think a lot of this goes back to the media, but this reparations bill they're pushing through right now, you know, where they're saying, they always like hand-wringing over the cost of housing in our state. And I get it. Cost of housing is very, very high. It's hard to afford a down payment and to afford a home. So the Democrats constantly talking about it's too expensive to buy a home. It's too expensive to buy a home. Homeownership is out of reach. Then they go and they pass a reparations program that gifts these $100,000 down payments to people based on skin pigmentation. And you know who pays for those? It's paid for using a fund that is collected from fees for home buyers. So now home buyers in our state of all colors, all ages, they need to pay an extra $1,000 at closing, and it's usually about $1,000, into this fund so other people can have a free down payment. So you're complaining that home ownership is expensive, and you just, for the vast majority of people, made it more expensive so a few people could get free down payments. It's like, that doesn't compute. That doesn't make any sense. No. You're making the problem you complain about worse.
Well, math is hard.
Yeah, math is hard. Math is hard. But you know, 2 + 2 = 5. And if you disagree, you're a racist. So
in Olympia, they tell you it was fish.
Two plus two is fish.
Yes.
I love it. All right, let's get to our Doge Miss of the Week. So there's been this whole back and forth, and the media is sort of fanning the flames of it. Are the cabinet agency heads annoyed with Elon Musk, right? We discussed this on the show. And I even said last week that I do want to make sure that Elon's working with the choices Donald Trump has made to lead these agencies. Yeah. Like, I don't really want Elon going around them. He should be working in concert with them because I trust Donald Trump's choices.
Yeah.
So this was so awkward. This honestly felt like a scene out of, like, I know it was a joke and I'll play it for you in a second if you haven't seen it. Felt like a scene out of like North Korea, you know, where you've got like the superior leader and everybody has to applaud in unison. So Donald Trump decides to like, well, he didn't decide. A reporter asked the question. And he kind of airs this grievance in front of everyone. Just watch.
President Trump put out a Truth Social today saying that everybody in the cabinet was happy with you. I just wondered if you had heard otherwise, and if you had heard anything about members of the cabinet who weren't happy with the way things were going. And if so, what are you doing to address those, any dissatisfaction?
Elon, let the cabinet speak just for a second.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, anybody unhappy with Elon, you know. If you are, we'll throw them out of here. Is anybody unhappy?
What are they going to say? Yes? Or are they going to be like, yeah, I'm unhappy with Elon? No, they're just like, ha, 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 ha. So a little bit awkward. I know he was trying to make a joke, but I'm like, I don't think that helped the situation.
No, but Elon was brought in there to be an agent of change, right?
Yeah.
And to be sandpaper on purpose. I think that's a good thing. I think that you've seen there was a report over the weekend. I'm sure you saw it. There was a back and forth between he and Rubio, I guess, where it got a little tense in the Oval Office. But again, I think these things are normal. I think that these things, funny enough, I think that these things, again, if you're looking at it through a private industry lens, these things are good things. Like,
yeah,
looking at the U.S. government, like, talk about the definition of a bureaucracy that needs to get agitated, right? Stirred up, mixed up. And that's what he's doing. And I think Trump's picked great people. At the same time, and this is one of the reasons I'm an advocate for some type of Doge being around on an evergreen basis, on a perpetual basis, because I think that there needs to be a constant grind or push against, like, any government. The bureaucracy is going to be a gravitational pull constantly, right? Because it's easy. And it's, you know, even in corporations, it's easy to pass the buck. It's, you know, when you have a corporation or any type of big body, like a government, where the bottom line is not the imperative thing, it's just very easy for your bureaucracy to build up. And I think that's why, like I said, I'd be in favor of there being an evergreen version of Doge around, constantly making sure that these things don't happen. And I think that Trump picked great people. I love his cabinet selections. And yet those people have all spent time in government. So they're going to need to have their feet held to the fire too.
Yeah.
And we all do. You know, you get put, there's this dichotomy that exists where whenever you think, well, if I was king for a day, here's what I would do, right? If I was in the cabinet and I ran the, you know, National Intelligence Agency or whatever, I'd do it this way. Well, whatever you think about that role, there's always a different view when you're sitting in that chair. Yeah, it always looks differently than you think it's going to. And a lot of times you can find yourself getting weighed down in the same bureaucratic mess that the previous guy was. And I think that's why it's great to have those change agents, those people like Musk constantly pushing, because that's the other thing to realize is that keeping something running efficiently, it's not, you know, it's like tending a garden, right? It's not a passive activity. It's not like you get it going right and it stays right. Keeping it right is a constant effort. You know, pushing back against that natural bureaucratic creep, it should be a constant effort and a constant fight. And we're just going to have to get used to it. And it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And I, you know, like, again, I know a lot of the powers that be won't like it. And why won't they like it? Because the system that it exists works really good for them. Right. And well, so.
And the media paints it as like just inherently a bad thing if there's tension between Elon Musk and the cabinets. I think it's a really good thing. And look, if Marco Rubio thinks that things are being cut from the State Department or that, you know, maybe he's not getting the oversight or the approval and he's the damn Secretary of State, I want him fighting for those things. For any of the agencies, they're Trump's people. And so I think that they're fiscally minded. So if they get in there and they see that there are things that are absolutely necessary to the mission of that agency and to serving the United States and Elon is cutting them, I want them to tell Elon that. So, and that just shows it's not an echo chamber, right? So I think you have a lot of people, I mean, that are just, oh my gosh, let me just kowtow. And that's been the complaint that the media has had about, Trump just surrounds himself with yes men and yes women. It's like, okay, you complain about that, and then you complain when there's internal strife and conflict. So let's let them hash it out, and we'll get to a good resolution. So I want people pushing back. The other thing I would note, like some of this stuff, and again, I harp on the media a lot because I think the media is a driver of a ton of this stuff. Think of how many of these cuts, if they were done secretly, right? And I don't mean secretly, but if they weren't done with the fanfare of Doge, just behind the scenes, like, let's cut that. Think of how many of them we never would notice. There are so many, you never would have noticed them if they didn't say it publicly. No one ever would have noticed that you cut money for LGBTQ in Lesotho or whatever it is. But oh my gosh, now it's on the news because Doge publishes it and it's the biggest deal in the world. Nobody notices these things. And so it's just all manufactured by the media.
Yeah, well, it's all manufactured by the media, and it's all just completely wasteful spending without any purpose. It does not engender any goodwill around the world, and it's just feeding. That's the other weird thing is, like, you look at some of these people and you go, "What? Hold on a second, you're defending this?
Yeah.
What are you defending? What? I mean, this is ridiculous on so many different levels. And you said it earlier, there have to be prosecutions. There's got to be people. People need to go to jail for this. Some of this stuff is just outright seditionous. Treasonous. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it needs to be. And that's why I have a very hard time taking anybody as a serious player that's taking the approach of trying to downplay this or minimize it. Waste is waste is waste. And it reeks of, it's just pure politics. And no matter what Trump's do, he's going to be evil and orange man bad. And, you know, it's just,
Well, and like you said, how can you defend some of it? Well, there's people who are trying in our state to thwart ICE raids, and ICE is out there arresting child rapists and people who are wanted for murder in their home country. Some dude who stabbed 4 people, and they're all out there trying to thwart ICE. It's like, when you're that politically driven and everything is seen through a political lens for you, and the other team can have no victories, right? That's how you're going to act. And that's how they're acting about Doge. That's how they're acting about ICE, even though there's some clearly great things that ICE is out there doing. So it's just people are blinded by their ideology. All right. Also something that's hard to make sense of in other Doge adjacent news. So I thought electric cars were great, right?
Well, they were. Until, again, the politics got in the way.
Ah, yes. So Elon Musk is evil now. And so all these people who love the climate don't love it that much because now they're lighting Teslas on fire. There were 2 instances of this in at least two that we know of in the last couple days in Seattle. Here's our friend Jonathan Cho with Discovery Institute covering the breaking news.
I went to the side window, I looked out, the flames were just pouring out.
Over the weekend, Seattle firefighters battled flames shooting out of a white Tesla Model 3 in North Seattle.
I tell you, that firefighter was courageous. He went up to the vehicle in flames.
Oh my gosh, a Tesla Cybertruck is on fire. All right, there's a fleet of Cybertrucks right now. Unbelievable. Seattle fire on the scene.
You know my favorite one I saw, though? Those celebrities who are donating their Teslas to charity because, like, Elon Musk bad. You already paid for it.
Well, here's the other one that I don't understand. Okay, so this is the quintessential, single biggest issue of our lifetime, right? Our existence, the survival of the species. And now all of a sudden we're going to go against our environmental and climate Jesus because we disagree on government spending.
That's what they've said, that climate change is the existential threat to our survival.
Yes. Yes. And that, like, I look at these people, I'm like, not only are you idiots, but you don't have any conviction either, right? Like, if it is the existential issue of our time, why would this little bit going around in DC, like, you know what I mean? Like, why all of a sudden would you, it'd be like if a massive asteroid was heading toward the Earth and there was one political party that had a plan to get rid of the asteroid and the other one just wanted to pretend like it didn't exist. And you, like, you knew the asteroid was coming and you got a small political disagreement with the other guys over, you know, what color to paint the Oval Office or something. And you're like, all of a sudden, oh, to heck with you guys. I'm going for the, and you're like, well, wait a second. Nothing really matters except the asteroid, right? Like, it's, and they can't even stick to their own existential threat for a very long time, which begs the question. Maybe it shouldn't. Maybe this makes me a bad guy. But it does beg the question. How sincere are these climate freakouts?
Is it the threat you say it is if you're willing to light electric vehicles on fire?
Doesn't seem like it. I mean, it doesn't seem like it. I got to be honest with you. I mean, if you thought that we were literally, you know, a couple dead baby seals and a few burnt up batteries away from this whole thing tipping over, you'd think you'd want to go about things a different way. But apparently, you know, there are no sacred cows that are safe, I guess.
I have a concept for why they might not seem so sincere, okay? It could be because they're actually being paid to be there. And before you dismiss that as a conspiracy, now, look, I didn't take this video. Maybe this was a hoax, but it sounds an awful lot like some of these Tesla protesters are paid to be there.
You get paid to be out here?
Yeah.
Amazing. It's just some pack.
You really are getting paid for this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh. Definitely. 100% I'm getting paid for this.
100% I'm getting. So maybe that's why it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us, because they don't care about the climate. They just care about money.
You got to give these people credit, though. They have become masters at subterfuge to a point that has even surprised me. Now, I think the reason it surprises me is I've always just been a person that does my own homework and you know, read the first person accounts and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I've never listened to the media to get my take on things. But it really is amazing how they understand the constituency and how the constituency works and how they just read headlines and how they just hear little quips and little blurbs. And they are so good at playing that game. You got a mountain of people, our state's full of them, that literally do not agree with the platform that they vote for every single election cycle. And they don't know that they don't agree. It really is. You and I both know it. There's so many people in this state like that, where I try to tell people, I'm like, in reality, this state is actually a center right state. It is. But you've got a big voting block in this state that has just been sold a bunch of things that aren't true. And they believe it.
By who? By who, Zach?
Well, I mean,
by the media.
By the media. And yeah, Bob Ferguson. I mean, all the usual suspects, too. But no, it's one of the most maddening things. And if you sit down and you'll have these conversations, and, you know, I've got people in my family like this, where you'll say three or four things and they agree with every one of them. Oh, yes, yes. Oh, it's horrible. Oh, yeah, yeah. Who are you voting for? Inslee. And you're like, or Ferguson. And you're going, you're literally voting against yourself. But you know, what do you do?
But you do you. Yeah, I will say of the paid protesters, we'll end it here. I don't like to just assume, you know, I think a lot of conservatives get into that, oh, these are paid Soros protesters. I think it gives them too much credit. Some of them probably, but there really are some who are just that batshit crazy, where they want to destroy electric vehicles because they hate Elon Musk that bad.
Yeah, if you do not think those people exist, you need to come visit Seattle.
Yeah,
Brandy and I can take you for a little field trip right around town. We'll change your perspective in a real quick hurry.
Yeah, there are very few things that leftists in Seattle have not saw fit to light on fire.
Oh my gosh, yeah, those people. Yeah, they are a special kind of nuts.
Yeah, I want to end with this act only because it's right in your ballpark. Andrew Yang, the 2020 presidential candidate, super far to the left, believes in like universal basic income. But he's come on our show a couple times, and I like Andrew. I get along great. But he said this on X: markets hate uncertainty and unpredictability, which might as well be Trump's middle names. Trump, Donald, John, uncertainty, unpredictability, Trump. I only ask you about that. You have these, like, for people who don't know or aren't familiar, you do these live webinars a couple times a year where you talk about the markets and all that. And you're having one that comes up, I think, on March 20th, where you're going to do first 100 days of Trump's administration. So I guess in the context of what Andrew Yang says there is, like, the markets hate uncertainty, unpredictability, and those are two things that Trump's all about. Do you agree with that sentiment?
No. No, I mean, the markets did phenomenal in his first 4 years. What are happening in the markets? This is another narrative. What are happening in the markets have very little to do with Trump. I think the tariffs are expediting what we were expecting coming out of COVID to begin with, meaning, you know, we all knew that there was going to be massive onshoring or basically a destructuring of big parts of the globalization that had built up over the last 30 years. The tariff side of that has just accelerated that process a little bit. So what is happening is you have had historically bad growth coming out of the 2008-2009 financial crisis, pretty much the world over. Okay, then in the center of that was U.S. dollar was the world reserve currency. Because it was the world reserve currency, it gave us the ability to stimulate our economy both on a monetary and fiscal basis without getting hit on the currency degradation side, meaning because we were the world reserve currency, we could be out there printing and stimulating without hurting the value of our currency. So what that effectively did is it made the U.S. markets the only game in town for most of the last 15 years. And that is how the U.S. market became the most overvalued it has ever been in history compared to the rest of the world. This is why a month and a half ago we were saying, look, prices in the U.S. are ridiculous. You need to get out of this high-priced, ridiculous stuff in the U.S., not abandon the U.S. completely, but get rid of some of these stupid high-priced companies like a Palantir, like an NVIDIA. NVIDIA is not stupid. It's just very complicated. But so many of these stocks, Apple, that we're all loaded up on that we've owned for so long, they're going to kill you because they're overvalued. They don't make sense. And now all of a sudden, tariffs are causing countries to repatriate their own capital, bring back their own manufacturing facilities. And there's a lot of other places to put capital now all of a sudden that look really good. Germany's talking about launching a big fiscal stimulus deal. Hmm. They've got all the ammunition to do it. They're only looking at, they're like 60% debt to GDP. So they've got all kinds of budgetary room to do the stimulus. So bottom line is, you know, that's why we're green on the year. And we actually had a really nice week last week when the market got killed, not because we're so smart and shorting things, but just because we've diversified around the world into much, you know, cheaper assets. We've got some protective things in the portfolio, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. The problem is everybody's loaded up in the U.S. and this isn't short-term tremors due to Trump's uncertainty. This is capital now has another place to go for the first time in 15 years. And I don't think there's any way the U.S. is going to maintain their current ridiculous multiple that they're trading at here compared to the rest of the world. So I think it's a big pivotal moment for investors. And I think investors desperately need to make some changes in their portfolios to make sure they're up to date with it.
It's fascinating stuff. See, you know how it works. That's why we have to have you on this show, because I know the politics and that's what you know. And I'll pitch this webinar because I know you won't, but you're having your 100 days live webinar March 20th, and people can sign up totally free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. It's just good information if you want to know, like, what's going on with the markets, Donald Trump, how does all this impact my retirement portfolio? So, Zach Abraham, hey, appreciate it. Still bullish on Doge?
Absolutely. Keep it rolling, baby.
Okay. All right. See you next week.